Hi, welcome back. Another week and pretty fun weekend. We teased this maybe 2-3 episodes ago.
Big show today.
Big show. We got the man, the voice of Los Alamitos.
The GOAT. Russell Lee calls him the GOAT.
And I don't want him to retire, but
he's the only announcer I've ever known at Los Alamitos. I mean, besides a couple special appearances by Katulak. And a few other people, but you know, he's the only announcer I've ever known, really.
So, welcome, Mr. Ed Berger. How you doing?
I'll tell you what, I started calling here in 1981. Neither one of you guys.
No, we weren't.
You weren't even born.
No.
That's the amazing part. And I started working here back in 77. So, you're like some of the younger trainers right now that they weren't even out of their mother's wombs when I was calling my first race. So, that's kind of scary.
That is pretty true. We both from 85.
Yeah.
So, you started calling in 81. Now, before all this, how long did you start thinking, I think I could be a race caller?
Actually, it was probably 1979.
Okay.
Because I was up at Bay Meadows, and I had never called a race before, and I called the last race one day. And everybody said, what a great job I did. But I'd been thinking about wanting maybe to try calling a race.
Yeah.
Then Todd Creed was the announcer up there. It's the first year Bobby Doyle didn't go to Bay Meadows to call the quarter horses. And Todd Creed was the thoroughbred announcer. Well, okay. Todd let me call the last race. Then Todd was sick the next 3 days, so I was able to call the races for three consecutive days, and everybody loved the work I did. And I knew right then that that's what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
That's how I pretty much got started.
Now, before all this, did you do some radio work?
Started working here in 77 in the publicity department. Bruce Rimbaud, who went on to Rio Dos and a lot of the other tracks, hired me to be the radio TV coordinator, so I was doing results for KNX Radio and a lot of the other radio and television stations. And I started doing interviews down in the winner's circle and handicapping seminars. So that's pretty much how I got involved in quarter horse racing, because all of my background before that, as far as racing went, I followed thoroughbreds all my life, not quarter horses.
Yeah. So we could say this is probably the place for, you know, I fell in love with quarter horse racing, obviously, Curtis as well.
Yeah.
So your first ever race was a thoroughbred race, right?
Well, the first race I ever went to was a thoroughbred race when I was 4 years old.
Yeah.
So I was a derelict a long time before.
I think that's how we all get it.
Yes, that's how we all get it.
You know, my dad, he loved to go out to the track and gamble, so he would take me out on Saturdays with him. And pretty much the whole story was, when I was in school, if you get a B average, I'll take you to the track each Saturday. So I always maintained my grades really well. And I had a teacher when I was in math in third grade that I would bring my racing form to class and would be between my books, and I would discussed some of the horses with him.
Nice.
I'm not going to say it's similar to what happened to that principal that lost his job.
Yeah, yeah.
Some of the teachers do like to gamble.
Yeah, I mean, it's
what that's worth.
We all, you know, we've all say it, but it's true. Once you kind of get the bug, you kind of become a lifer. You tend to follow, whether you want to be a follower of the racing or be involved in it. Once you really understand the game and it catches on, I think it's hard to really turn off from it, right?
No, it gets in your blood, that's for sure. I mean, I'll go home at night, and a lot of my thoughts are still with horse racing and what's going to happen. And the nice part about racing, I don't know what you guys think, is that each race is different. So you can go from one race to another. Nothing's ever the same. So that's kind of what keeps me interested in racing, because I know that you can put the last race, or you should put the last race out of your mind and just go on four, because you're going to have different scenarios, different trainers, different jockeys, different pace setups. So it makes it really interesting.
UCLA alum?
Yeah, I graduated in 1974. I was sports editor of the Daily Bruins.
So you were? Oh, okay.
I covered the Bill Walton era, John Wooden.
Nice.
I was back at Notre Dame when the winning streak was snapped at 88 games. So,
88 games?
Yeah, 88 games in a row. Wow. UCLA had won. So I was able to cover all that, and I was able to fly with the team. And when I was sports editor of the Daily Bruin, I was even able to manage to put a horse racing column in once every week, which I did on my own.
Yeah.
I go out to Hollywood Park, I go to some places and interview some people, and that's pretty much how I became acquainted with some of the horse racing personalities. Gordon Jones.
Yes.
Came out and spoke at one of my journalism classes, and Gordon's the one who took me out to Hollywood Park, and that's where I met a lot of the people that got me involved.
So
always love seeing him at Fair Play.
Yes, right?
That's
the big headset?
Yeah.
Big headset with the big microphone.
You stand on the boxer, and that was when you knew it was Fair Play time, when he was out there giving picks by the paddock.
Yeah,
that was always something to see.
It's fun.
And the one thing about Curtis, I mean, I don't know how old you were when Moving Brown Jug was running, but your dad's trained a lot of great. You were probably what, 5 or 6 years old?
Right? Yeah, I was. We still have the statue right there.
Really?
You know, when you walk into the house. But yeah, that's definitely one of the older favorites we have. But yeah, I was pretty young. I don't even remember him running really.
No, your dad had some great horses back there with George Love and a lot of the people. So
yeah, he was really doing well in the 90s with George Loeb, like you said, and Bill Stratmore had all those Artesia horses, and that was a pretty good family for him.
Now, so you went to UCLA, you graduated. Were you always close? Did you ever take a break from Los Al as far as not being part of the team here?
When I graduated from UCLA in 74, I got a job at the Orange Coast Daily Pilot, mm-hmm. which was a newspaper owned by the Los Angeles Times, but it's located in Costa Mesa. So. Okay. And it covered all of the Orange County sports. So I worked there for 2.5 years before I got hired here. But the reason I got hired here, I'd come out and I had done a few stories on some of the horse racing people here. Yeah. And that's how I got to know Bruce Rembo. And I always told Bruce, if a job opens up here, I'd really be interested.
Yeah.
And Bruce called me when a position opened up. And that's how I became involved here. And I started a handicapping publication with a friend of mine, Warren Eaves, back in 1978. Yeah. We had Quarter Horse Report. And that's how I started watching all the replays and everything else and got myself involved in so much of the handicapping.
Now, would it be fair to say that quarter horse racing became the true calling, the true love?
Obviously, yeah. It became my true love after I was here about a year, year and a half.
Yeah.
Once I started watching the replays and started handicapping, and to me it became so much easier to handicap a quarter horse
race. I agree.
Than handicap a thoroughbred race because number one, never have to worry about horses going from turf back to dirt.
Yeah, exactly.
And they pretty much run most of the same distances, and you could handicap horses going from 300 to 350 to 400, but you didn't have to worry about horses going a mile and a half.
Yeah.
And horses coming in from so many different tracks, and I just thought that the trouble aspect is what got me interested in watching horses and trying to analyze the trouble and how much the rider had in reserve at the end if the mm-hmm. horse got in trouble, and you could pretty much get a good price on the replays by doing that.
I agree. I think overall, if I tell people that are not right away involved in like betting quarter horse racing, obviously you chart the races, and I'm pretty sure you've got a great eye now for catching any little misstep out of the gate and any kind of trouble like that, whether it's brushing or maybe turning the head and not running straight. That could be something that maybe a regular fan might not pick up on a daily basis. And I think that's where analyzing the replays comes in very handy.
Yeah, I think the best thing you can do if you're handicapping horse racing is get into watching replays. Mm-hmm. I can watch the races and chart to the best of my ability, but sometimes it's hard to put into words exactly what had happened, at the beginning of a race, if a horse, took a bad step or maybe he did something. Sometimes there's a gray area where I really don't know exactly what to put, and the races can be very subjective from person to person. Yes. The way you watch them. So my number one thing would be if you're new to gambling, get into watching replays.
Yeah. So this is what year number of you calling races here?
So we 37.
37.
I started 81. So yeah, 37 years.
Yeah, 37 years. And as of right now, you're scheduled to retire at the end of
December 30th.
All right, December. So that's the date.
That's the scheduled date.
Okay, well, you still have one more year of a big caliber program in the middle of July. You have the AQHA Championships at the end of the year.
One more winner dog.
Now, that's the biggest crowd on track year every year.
Yeah.
And it's a fun night. I love it.
That's it's pretty big for the community. Everybody, yeah. That's the one day everybody from around here comes out and Ed does a great job calling the – you want to talk about trouble?
Yes.
I mean, there's huge trouble in those races. Those dogs are going everywhere.
Now, obviously, you called some terrific, terrific horses. Is there any particular horses that come to your mind that you were a big fan of?
First Champion of Champions I called. I don't know why. Maybe it's just because it was my first year of calling, but Denim and Diamonds and Sergeant Pepper Feature,
mm-hmm.
when they were in the Champion of Champions and ran first and second, and R.D. Hubbard owned Denim and Diamonds. Tom Neff owned Sergeant Pepper Feature, and Mike Robbins trained Sergeant Pepper Feature.
Really? Okay.
So Mike's still obviously involved with Reliance yes. Ranches and has a lot of horses, but that's the race I probably remember the most because it was my first Champion of Champions. I went over to a place called Rickabob's, which is now Gourmet Pie, but it's been several different names.
Names, yeah.
And sat down with R.D. Hubbard after the races, and ordered a Budweiser, and he says, no, you got to drink Coors Light at my table. You can't drink, because he was a Coors Light person.
Oh, really?
So nice. That's how I got involved drinking Coors Light.
So you can blame
Hubbard to blame.
You can blame
Hubbard to blame, but that's the race I still remember the most of all the champions I've called. And I won't say, obviously, those are probably aren't the greatest horses I've called. They were both outstanding horses.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, first down dash, winning the champion of champions. Mm-hmm. I go back and take a look at the field that he beat.
Yeah.
And that was a spectacular win. Refrigerator winning three champion of champions. And that'll probably never be surpassed again. Those would probably be some of the top moments.
Now, as a race caller, I'm pretty sure, just like, you know, myself being an analyst and handicapper, I'm probably my biggest critic when I miss something or when I structure my ticket wrong or whatever. I'm probably my biggest critic. I'm sure you are for yourself as well. Is there one race that you would like to take back? One that you're like, ah, oh, I completely
tossed. 2012 All-American Futurity.
I remember that one. And it wasn't your fault. It was, to me, in the audio, it sounded like a technical malfunction.
Well, what happened, and I don't want to, you know, I messed up the call. I'll be the first to admit that. But when the gate opened, my headset slipped off my head. It slipped off, and I was trying to catch it. And I kind of lost track of which horses were where.
Yeah.
But that's a lame excuse because the headset should have been on a little more thoroughly.
Yeah.
But, you know, I called Ochoa the day before in the All-American Derby,
yeah,
which I thought was one of my better calls.
Yeah.
And to come back in the All-American Futurity, I came right on TVG afterwards. I said, you know, I screwed it up. You know, things happen. But I think every announcer I know at one time or another, if you think back, my good friend Larry Colmes, I mean, he still hits himself in the head with that call. I believe it was in the Wood Memorial a couple years ago. He'll be the first to admit that he called the wrong horse coming on the inside, and then Trevor missing Street Sense in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile until the last 50 yards. So it's going to happen.
Tom Durkin misses Mind That Bird.
You know, it's one of those things that, but you're right. I still remember that race like it was yesterday, and I beat myself in the head for like a week or two afterwards.
it's tough, but I mean, you know, one of the things I always thought it was very, very good from the things you do is just you tend to call a lot of detail in such a short amount of time. Wouldn't you agree, Curtis? Like,
yeah,
to get a lot of details in such a 15-second race is not an easy task to do. And overall, I think Ed does a great job.
Yeah, I mean, just from these 100-yard races, you know, a lot of the announcers, you'll hear them say, like, how many horses can Ed get out of something like this? You know, I could get maybe the first or second horse out of there, and that's it. But you know, Ed's just trying to power through all those, and we've had them, you know, a lot more lately. But yeah, in my eyes, there's nobody better in quarter horse racing.
Was there ever a time where there was thoughts of going anywhere else at Los Alamitos?
Well, back in 1994, Trevor Dimmitt would take his vacation at Hollywood Park in the fall.
Yeah,
and I felt Artie Hubbard, who was running Hollywood Park at the time, and Ed Allred, who was running Los Alamitos right now, they thought it'd be a great promotion to have me fill in for Trevor during those couple of weeks and still come down here and call. So
yeah,
promote Los Alamitos at the same time. Well, I call those 2 years at Hollywood Park, and then Doc called me up here one day and says, what am I paying you right now? I said, well, here's what you're paying me. He says, here's what I'm going to pay you now, so I don't want you to go to Hollywood Park.
Yeah.
I think Hubbard at that time was thinking, well, maybe we can get Ed to come over here.
Yeah.
It's definitely good leverage for you.
So it was good leverage at that time, but I still, as much as I enjoyed working at Hollywood Park, I still felt more at home here.
Yeah, I think
and I think it's because I've gotten to know the people, I know the horses.
Mm-hmm.
I like the handicapping aspect of it. So,
and I think overall, like we joke around, but this is like home to us. Like,
oh yeah.
I mean, I grew up nearby Long Beach. I started coming here to the races, you know, as a kid as well, and I always wanted to be at the track. Friends were out doing this or that. I was like, I want to go to the track. And I'm pretty sure that's the same thing with you.
Yeah, I mean, I've met a lot of my lifelong friends here.
I met my wife here.
Yeah, same thing. I met my wife here when she came to work at Los Al, and she came up to the press box to work. You know, one of my best friends, you know, George Duarte, you know, Quarters George on Twitter, met him down in the arcade, and we've just grown up together, and a lot of my other friends, and we've gone on to claim horses together. We bred a quarter horse, and like you said, it just gets in you, and yeah, this is all I've ever wanted to do. You know, just Friday through Sunday, Thursday through Sunday, this is the only place I wanted to go.
Yeah, it's all we have our own community here.
Yes, it is.
It's like our home that would be somebody else's home somewhere else, because it's not like when you go to a baseball game or a football game or work at a place like that, because you have so many different types of people here at the racetrack. It's a tight-knit community.
Yeah,
it is. So what's the plan for retirement?
Well, I have a home up in Prescott Valley. Mm-hmm. We've had the home up there for 12 years, and I'm not going to totally retire. Still going to be doing a lot of stuff on the computer involved in horse racing.
Yeah.
I might still be involved doing a few things for Los Alamitos, but I need to sit down with Dr. Allred and talk about that. Mm-hmm. And my wife and I want to do quite a bit of traveling. Her goal, and she's as sick as I am sometimes, she wants to try to hit as many racetracks in the country as we can.
Traveling. Is she into horse racing as well then?
Well, I met her. She was a bartender
Back
in the 80s when I met her up in Fresno. And she comes out occasionally. And she used to come out with $20 and be happy. Now she needs 100 or 200, and she wants to play trifectas and superfectas all the time.
She takes the wallet and gives you a 20 and keeps the wallet.
Yeah, she loves to play the tries and supers and can't get her to make a win better. Yeah. So what does that tell you?
Yeah, she's going for the big hits.
She understands the game. That much helps if you don't have somebody that understands the game involved. And she knows my ups and downs and my moods. And she comes home, if I come home at nighttime and I'm not in a real good mood, she just stays away from me.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, if you lose a tough voter, you get DQ'd on a questionable DQ. Well, I won't say that.
Yeah.
But, you know, things happen.
But that is very true, because if, you know, we're obviously we're all married, and if we didn't have spouses that understood the game, at least in the level, we would all probably be divorced by now.
Yeah.
Because it becomes a life. It's a lifestyle. It's not like a clock in at 8 a.m. and clock out at 4. It's a lifestyle.
It's weird hours.
Yes.
And most of the time it's weekends.
Yes.
And so when other people are going out partying, you know, you have to be able to be with a spouse who says Friday through Sunday night, we're going to the horse track.
Yeah. Well, not only that, during the daytime, you're on the computer looking at replays.
Exactly,
so
yeah.
I had to understand that part of it, too. That's, it comes with the territory.
Yep.
Yeah, my wife's like, what are you doing on the computer on Tuesday? I was like, well, the entries are out. I'm looking at replays already.
It's just a week-long process. It is. They're drawn Tuesday for Friday and Wednesday for Saturday and so on. So, yeah, it's just it can be almost a 24/7 thing.
So are you much of a golfer, or any hobbies outside of horse racing you want to pick up?
Well, I like to bowl.
Oh,
I'm not
Curtis,
a golfer.
Curtis is a good
you
bowler.
You never told me you liked to bowl.
I haven't bowled in quite a while. You know, when I was at UCLA, and I mean, I wasn't a great bowler.
But
I'd probably average around 140, 150. Yeah. It's nothing spectacular.
Yeah.
Just have some fun, kill some time.
That's the one sport I enjoy.
Yeah, it's good.
I'll take up golf, too. Yeah. I've got a few people that want to get me out of the golf course.
Shout out to Dave Weaver. Dave Weaver's a golfer. And
yeah, Weaver and McKeever.
He's known to put up little side wagers. His swing is ugly, but he's got a good putter.
Seems like those are good opponents to start with.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I've actually picked up bowling in the last couple of months again. Went to Vegas a few months ago on a Monday, Tuesday. We bowled like two nights in a row. That's fun. So maybe we can go bowling one of these nights.
I'm all up for it. I know all the bowling alleys around here.
I've been coming off a long layoff.
That way. That'd be good. Anything else you want to ask Burghardt?
Oh, gosh. Who would be your favorite horse of all time?
Yeah, a good question.
My favorite horse of all time?
Yeah.
Quarter horse.
Yeah.
God, there's so many of them.
All right, give me at least a few out of the top of your head that we can add to that list. No particular order, but just a few horses that stand out to you.
Probably because he won so many stakes races here at Sinalante.
Oh, okay.
Which was an 870 horse that John Cooper had that he performed for so many years at a high level, which is hard to do going 870.
Didn't he run for,
I think he ran for a claiming tag at one time, but he became an exceptional 870 horse. I think he's got 17 stakes wins here. I think he's tied for the record.
Maybe.
A lot of the great horses that I knew beforehand, like Kawea Bar and Charger Bar, I wasn't working here when those horses ran, but those are kind of two of the quarter horses that got me interested in the sport as a fan. But since I've been here, I mean, Dash for Cash is probably the greatest quarter horse I've ever seen. And I wasn't working here when he set the record in the Champion of Champions, but his win that year in the Champion of Champions was almost like a thoroughbred winning by 10 or 12 lengths. That's the one race that stood out to me the most. So I'd say Dash for Cash is the best quarter horse.
Have you ever been involved in owning or breeding at all?
No.
Never?
Never had any interest. I don't know why.
Yeah.
Maybe then once I'm retired, that's something I want to get involved in.
Yeah.
Run a few horses somewhere. That's, you know, it's something I can discuss with my wife. never had any desire. And don't think it would been in my best interest in my position. Not so much the announcing part of it, but doing the morning line.
Yeah.
That if I was running a horse, I could probably have some issues there.
And that's another
thing. Perception wise.
Yeah, and that's another thing I want to touch on. It's just so hard to find a price here because you're just so sharp on the morning line. So whenever I try to find a little bit, I'll squeeze a little bit of price. I try to lay the hammer and see if I can get a price. But when did you start doing the morning line?
Started doing the morning line. I want to say it was either at this. It was probably 1 year before I started announcing.
Okay, so you did that before.
I did the morning line up at Bay Meadows the first year I went up there, and the unfortunate part was when I was hired to do the morning line, nobody ever told it. Thoroughbred morning line maker, he wasn't doing the line, so I came up there and there he is sitting there turning his line in for the
No.
And you just gave him the boot?
I just said, hey, no, I didn't do that.
You were the new kid in town?
I felt terrible. I mean, here's this
older
guy.
I can see that.
Yeah. It was awful.
Yeah.
But that's when I started doing the morning line, and I think it's because Jim Smith, who was general manager at that time for the Quarter Horse Association, they liked what I was doing down here, my work involved with handicapping. They said, we'll bring you up to Bay Meadows this year if you can help out in the press box and promote quarter horse racing. So that was one of the decisions they gave me. So that's how I got started doing the morning line. I think from watching all the replays and my handicapping report I did here before, that kind of gave me an advantage. And that's how Dr. Allred started reading a lot of my stuff too. So
how long would you say it took you to really, you know, fine tune the process?
You know, I know I irritated people. I probably went overboard sometime because there was a horse one day that one of the big gamblers, he's no longer alive, but was really mad at me after, you know, because the horse ran seventh the first time out by four lengths. Mm-hmm. And I laid him 3-1 in the morning line. He said, what are you doing to us? You're going to kill us.
Yeah.
And the horse went off at 2-1.
Yeah.
You know, but I was at that time when you make the morning line, you want to make the line the way the public's going to bet the race. Mm-hmm. But there were so many big players at the time that would bet a lot of money that almost influenced the tote board, so I was kind of trying to read what they were going to do as well. And it's still that way to a certain extent, but not as quite as bad as it was then. So I would lay horses that other line makers might make 15 or 20-1. I was putting them at 4 or 5-1 because I could tell off the trouble
who was going to bet,
how the money was going to come in. It's still that way today on certain horses, like Perry's Pleasure that's running on the first race. We'll talk about that in a while. They ran third first time out as a maiden coming into the trials and made the horse 2-1.
But that's because we anticipate some of the sharpest players looking at these trials because this is what horse players are really looking at. And we anticipate horses getting bet down. But, it's, you know, it's been quite a career. Me and Curtis, that's all we've known. You, the voice is Los Alamitos. So it'll be strange, but I know you won't be far away.
He's the one that first got us all together when we did the Champion of Champions show a few years ago.
He was the first one that gave us a shot to be on air next to him. 2011, 12.
Oh gosh, I don't. I still go back.
It was the Challenge Championships. I think it was it 2014.
Let me see.
No, I'm pretty sure it was Champion.
It was in December.
Aguila Real.
So it was 20. It was 2012.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was 2012 because I remember I was in Arizona and I came back home for the winter, and that was December. So it was 2012.
Yeah.
So
I'm horrible. That's why I always say, that's why I do the charts. Because I can't remember any races. I'm just, like Ed said, I watch one and then I'm on to the next one. That's why I write it all down.
The amazing part about me, you know, talking about remembering races, I'll walk out of here at nights and somebody will say, well, who won the third race?
And I can't remember.
Right? I can't remember because I have to put each race out of my mind once it's over because I have to memorize the horses for the following race. So I couldn't tell you when to walk out of here tonight if somebody asked me.
Exactly. Now, when did you begin to really... Was it right away that you're like, oh, it's pretty easy, the memorizing process, as far as memorizing silks and names and all that?
I think what helped me memorizing the silks and names, I'd watched replays doing all my handicapping for a while. I got to know the colors of a rider, the rider's style, so you could pretty much tell when Bruce Pilkington or Ralph Pauline or Kenny Hart was on a horse, you could tell the way they sat.
Mm-hmm.
And they would pretty much wear the Blaine Schwanneveld silks. So they'd just pretty much associate the silks with the name of the horse, and I've got a good memory for that, and I don't have a good memory for people's names. I think I irritated a woman one time. I said, if you had 4 legs, I'd remember your name. I said the same thing to a man. You know, I said, you know, I can remember somebody with 4 legs.
Yes.
And a tail, but I can't remember
a person. Yeah.
Yeah.
It just doesn't sound good right now.
But it's true. I'm terrible with names, too. Like,
I'm good with, you know, associated in colors mm-hmm. of jockeys and horses. Yeah. But people, it takes me a long time to remember the name. I have no idea.
Especially at, you know, at the racetrack where you constantly meet new people.
Right.
And it's always been hard to remember. You'll see them again, and they'll come up to you, oh, hey, Curtis, you know, hey, Ed. And I'll say, I can't remember your name. I'm sorry. You know, at first I was very embarrassed about it, but now I'm just out with it.
Like, you have to. Yeah. It's better to be upfront. Oh, sorry, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
Instead of trying to guess it or whatever, or trying to remember, or act like you remember, but
yeah,
it's always being honest is the best way to go about it. So, all right, that's a good chat with Ed, and this won't be the last. I'm pretty sure we'll have you again. Book that down. We'll have you again for another big night, maybe in the future. But
you mean to handicap the winter dog
yes,
races?
Yes, yes, that'll be fun.
Well, yeah, for the most important night of the year.
Well, we got the Challenge Championships.
Yes.
California Champions Night. So we got some big nights coming up later on this year.
California Champions Night is probably one of my favorite quarter horse cards, period, just because it's
and
great.
And I think, you know, he's the Dash of Fire's back in training
yes.
right now.
Mm-hmm.
Jay Fire Up's back in training. So a lot of the big horses are coming up, and I'm not sure what the plans are for those horses, but I would think that more than likely he's the Dash of Fire may show up on California Champions Night, unless they're going for the vessel's maturity, so I'm not exactly sure.
Yeah, about a month. What is it?
It's the last Saturday in July.
Yeah, so we're
6 weeks.
June 9th, yeah, six weeks away. Yeah, about 6 weeks away from California Breeders Champions Night. So some big names back on the grounds working. And there's a horse, as we're going to talk about the trials on Sunday night, Ed Burke Million. Can you talk a little bit about about Ed Burke? And
well, Ed Burke was the racing secretary and pretty much the general manager here at Los Alamitos well before I came to work here. So I never met the man.
Mm-hmm.
So I couldn't tell you a whole lot about him, except he was a big figure in the, you know, office atmosphere here. Curly Smith is the one that succeeded him.
Okay.
And Curly was, well, your dad could tell you more about Curly Smith than I could. I mean, I worked a little bit with Curly,
mm-hmm.
and he had a really good feel for the horses. He knew every horse in that barn area. He'd go out and clock the horses himself in the morning, and he was really strict.
Really? You know,
and he was really, the rules were very, very stringent at that time.
Yeah,
and that was back in the 70s. And then after Curly Smith retired, we had Dick Ballas come in as the racing secretary.
Mm-hmm.
And Ron Church succeeded Dick. Ron was here up until 2 years ago. And then Jay Conklin, who's an ex-jockey that rode AV Water Runner back in All-American Futurity, has now stepped in doing a very good job. So that's kind of how the progression's gone with the people in the racing office.
All right, so that's a little bit of the background. 11 trials, and we just missed, I want to say, four more horses to make it 12 trials. Can have three pick fours, but we're only going to have two pick fours with 11 races. I think the scheduled post time is 6:20 or 6:40?
No, it's 6:20. We're going to start 9 minutes before Golden Gate's last race. Golden Gate's running 12 races.
Yes.
But I think it was a great move on our part, because we're going to take 26 minutes between races instead of 28.
Okay.
So our last race is going to go at 10:40.
Okay.
Had we waited until Golden Gate was done and started 20 or 30 minutes afterwards, we would have been racing until 11:30, which is awfully late on a Sunday night when people have to get up and go to work the next morning. So.
We'll probably be sleeping in a doghouse if our spouses, we got a little bit later after that. So.
Well, not necessarily. But we hit a couple of pick fours to hand them a few dollars.
Anytime you can take them shopping, you know, all is forgiven.
By the way, not anything mentioned about the winnings. Tell us your biggest score ever. A big pick four, big pick six?
The score I remember the most, it's not my biggest score,
but yeah, it's a horse memorable.
There's a horse called Both Ends Burning,
okay,
which was a Neil Drysdale trained horse. And the reason I remember this, I had gone up to work one of the thoroughbred meets at Bay Meadows, the San Mateo Fair.
Okay.
And I was just doing some work in the group sales department. And that's when they had a lot of the jockeys come in from Australia for a special competition where they ran a big thoroughbred race up there at that time. So the Bay Meadows Invitational, I think, and Russell Bayes rode this horse, and I was super impressed. Well, Neil Drysdale had brought Russell Bayes down to ride the horse in the Oak Tree Invitational at Santa Anita, a mile and a half on the turf.
Okay.
And I bet 250 to win, 250 to place on him, and got back 9,000. So
jeez. Wow.
And that at that time, I thought that was, you know,
yeah,
he went off at 25 to 1.
Yeah.
So, of course, I was in Reno the next day. I was crazy. The next time. I had no clue.
You're rich.
You didn't just fire it all back, did you?
No.
It lasted 2 days. It lasted 2 days.
It lasted 3 days.
Oh, there you go.
No, but that's the score I probably remember the most. Yes. You know, and I've been involved, you know, in some pick sixes with people and everything else that have paid, you know, really well. Brad, it was funny. A friend of mine was at Santa Anita one day, and we go partners often, and I had gone to church that morning with my wife, and I call him up afterwards. He says, you know, he says, you're in for 20%. He put me in for 20% on the ticket. He says, just, you know, because we're friends.
Yeah.
And it paid really well that day. So I said, I better start going to church all the time.
That's good. So, yeah. So, yeah, myself, we're casino guys as well. So I don't blame you for going to Reno.
I don't go that day. But that was back when I was single.
Yeah.
I just
had
a girlfriend at that time. So, I mean, it was, you know.
It was fun.
It was fun.
Yeah, that's good.
Right. You had the big.
Yeah.
What was it, 60,000?
65.
65,000?
2006 Champions Night. The wave cover.
Yeah.
I did not have Biabono on the outside.
So you were scared at that?
I was scared because I was watching it up. You know, I used to hang out right up here on the grandstand on the top side. You know, I remember it was rainy that night. I was 4-for-4. And that was when we used to run the feature one before the last.
Mm-hmm.
So Champions was race 10. And then we had one more after that. So watching it live upstairs, I thought Biabono had won because of how the angle from over there. And I thought he had gotten up. And at that point, I think I had apolitical time in that field? Yeah, apolitical time, Wave Carver. And I want to say someone else. So, yeah, I was 5-for-5, but I thought I was out. And then I didn't look at the world pace in the last race. I didn't want to look at them.
Yeah.
But I was guessing 10 grand, 5 grand or something. But it was a huge carryover, and I ended up getting like 65,000 on a $96 ticket, which is great. So next day I went to the dealership, bought me a truck, and the rest of the money's gone by now. But it was fun time. So, you know, Los Al's been many memories, and let's see if we can make some more memories the rest of the year. So 11 trials on Sunday night. And one of the horses I want to ask you, Ed, that had tons of trouble in the last few weeks was Book of Matches. And that horse is not in here. Do you know if that horse maybe wasn't nominated?
I went back and checked. The horse was not nominated.
There you go. Okay.
And I'm guessing that the horse will be in the trials for the Governor's Cup.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think that's what they're planning on. And I'm not sure if there's any setback with the horse, but I would think the longer distances are going to suit Book of Matches. In fact, Bobby Newman, who's the daytime thoroughbred announcer, was upset. He called me the other day and said, where's Book of Matches?
Yeah.
That's on his horse.
Yeah.
One of his horses has been waiting.
Yeah.
But I checked and he was not paid into this race. So I'm sure that, knowing John Cooper, he won't want to work the horse before the trials for the Governor's Cup, so he'll probably try to put him in a maiden race.
Yeah, yeah.
Because John's the type of, why do I have to work him when I don't get paid for working him? And the horse probably could use another race.
Yeah, yeah. So that was one of the horses that had a huge trouble line, and we're all waiting for that horse to come back. So we'll probably see a lot of those 2 year olds that we didn't see tonight enter back in the Governor's Cup futurity trials. But your horse is entered, right?
We're in.
So we're going to talk about that. So let's get right to the trials, race number one. And we're going to let the guest go first. Gonna let Ed Borgart give us his top selections first. So 350 yards, field of 9. Who did you lay as a morning line favorite here?
I laid Perry's Pleasure as a half-sister to Jay Fire Up, who, of course, was the AQHA champion 2 year last year. And I thought Perry's Pleasure, of all the horses I've watched work this year, is one of the best workhorses I've seen. Had the two-hole the first time out and just kind of hesitated and didn't really start running until the last 16th. But if you watch the tape, the horse is probably 2-3 lengths in front before they hit the first turn. Yeah. This is loaded with run, now going 350. And I remember Jay Fire Up lost the first time out and went on to get better as the year went on. So I picked Perry's Pleasure over One Berry, who's got a little more quickness out of the gate. But I don't know if One Berry is going to be as effective going 350 as she was going 300. So I picked him 7-6 and a lot of delights, my third pick. I like the fact that Carlos Huerta, who's been fighting his weight this year, won 2 races on Friday night.
Yeah.
And when I talked to Jay Conklin, he said he was down in the jockstrom before the races Friday night and talked to Carlos and said that's the best Carlos has looked in probably several months. So I think Carlos might have his weight issue under control. So if that's the case, he's a good rider. So those are the three I'm going with, the 7, 6, and 5.
So we're pretty much on point. The consensus is out, and we printed it. Me and Ed agree on a lot of races. So you're going to see a lot of common horses from me and Ed. I just have a different order. I like 6, 5, 7 in that order. I'm going to see, you know, I like the quickness from one Burry out of the gate, but I think 5 and 7 are probably the main threats there. So I'm just worried that they're all drawn right next to each other, which could lead to a little bit of trouble. But that's what I like. I'll go 6, 5, 7 here in race one.
Yeah, for my top pick, I went with the 6-1 Burry.
Yeah.
Just because of the gate speed that this horse carries, and I think 350 is probably going to be the max distance this horse wants to go. Perry's Pleasure does scare me from the works. You know, broke really fast in both times, which surprised me when, you know, he didn't get away that well in the beginning. But came running on. But I'm hoping that one Burry can just outbreak him and kind of carry that gate speed. For third, I went with the 8, Executive Walk, who didn't really run a stellar, you know, time the first time out, but broke well and just lugged out and got beat half a length. But this horse is a half to Big Blue. So, if we see this horse improve just a little more, I think it can be right there. I like where he's drawn to the outside of Perry's Pleasure.
There's plenty of good readings in some of these horses. We got Perry's Pleasure to J. Pyro. We got one Burry out of Blackberry Check. Then we have Executive Walk there by out of Executive Lick. So pretty good field to kick off the night of trial. So recap my picks, 6, 5, 7. And you went with?
I went with 7, 6, 5.
And you went?
6, 7, 8.
All right, race two. Trial number two tonight. This is a field of 8. We got a few fields of 9. This is a field of 8. And you got a SC Moneymaker who didn't get out all that quick in the kindergarten futurity here. But I think maybe with a cleaner path, he should be tough to beat. But I'm going to try to beat him with a horse towards the inside and powerful favorite. But who would you go with here, Ed?
My best bet of the night is the 3 powerful favorite. I love this horse. I like the horse in the workouts going into the debut, and just the way this horse extended the stride. And Chris O'Dell's having a fantastic year, and the horses tend to get better the longer he has them. I don't know what Curtis thinks, but SC Moneymaker is going to be making his 5th start since March. So we're talking 5 starts, and I don't think he's adjusted, if I put it that way. So I'm not knocking SC Moneymaker, but I think we've seen the best of SC Moneymaker. So I absolutely love Powerful Favorite. I thought Back in Time as a horse you might want to consider using the exotics. This horse got knocked off stride badly last time out. I thought should have won. And I think that horse could run second if SC Moneymaker doesn't show up. So I like 3, 4, and 6.
You kind of took the words out of my mouth as far as Back in Time, because in my notes here I said should have won. Look at that. So, yeah, we agree. And we agree to the point. I like 3, 4, 6 as well. Everything you said about Powerful Favorite, one of my big notes with that I know wrote down in my video review was big, big strides. It just looked like a horse that's going to enjoy the extra distance. So me and Ed agree once again here in race two. Would you go here with Curtis?
Yeah, I think we all went with Powerful Favorite.
We're all against the SC Moneymaker.
Yeah, I think we've just, like Ed said, this horse might have maxed out at that 15:31. I think that that's a really tough time to go fast for them and to improve. He did have a lot of trouble in the final for the kindergarten, but from watching Powerful Favorite in the works, I thought this horse was just really under a hold, and those came out and drew clear in that debut effort, really showed us that. And I think the 350 will be no problem for this horse. I went for a price in my 3rd spot. I went Corona Crush for Yannette Rodriguez. In the debut, I thought it was a pretty good maiden effort there with Stevie B, Flash of Cash, and I like my chances. Some of those horses came back to run well and just stumbled coming out of the gate and really didn't show anything in that fraternity trial. But I think with a clean start, maybe this horse can get brave. I don't think she's anywhere, or he's anywhere near the 3 or the 4.
Yeah.
But I think he can do well with a fast start.
I'm very interested in seeing the first 2 trials, because I think the first 2 trials are going to have some solid runners that could probably set the bar as far as the time goes to begin the night. So, all right, we're going to try to beat SC Moneymaker. All 3 of us will go with Powerful Favorite there in race number 2. Race 3, field of 8. And this is a runner that I was very visually impressed with the debut victory. And now he's coming in from out of town from Monte Rosa. So I'll pick Apolitical Pence on top. Don't know. I was visually impressed with Monster Hand. I don't know if the extra this is going to benefit. But I'll give the slight edge to the outside Apolitical Pence because of the outside post.
I watched the videotape on Apolitical Pence. I happened to go back to that Remington Park race.
Yeah.
And about 20 yards before the wire, I don't know if it was the off track or what, the horse swerved out about five lanes and kind of annihilated another horse, basically. Yeah. And that's why the horse got disqualified. I wish the workout would have been a little bit better. That's my only concern. Yeah. He's under some pressure in the workout, and I was not overly impressed with the work. So I would spread in here myself. You know, Monster Hand is out of Remember Me Rose, who was the dam of Powerful Favor and the dam of the Revenant.
Never
and was the champion's dam, I think, was won our three bars, not the three bars award, but the James B.A. Carter Award last year.
Yeah.
Because it dropped several good runners. So
she's dropped, like, quality runners.
Yeah. I mean, they're all allowance company and above.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I think if you follow Lo Sal, that's just one of the families you had to pick up from.
Yeah.
Yeah, Remember Me Rose just dropping winner after winner. I put Monster Hand on top again. For a second, I went with Apolitical Pence.
Yes.
Kind of what we've been saying, this horse, you know.
He looked like he was going to win by like two or three lengths at one point.
Yeah, I mean, the horse just looks so quick early and draws an outside post here. But I thought the same thing as Ed. He had a nice time of 12-3, but I think he was under urging. You know, he was under a drive throughout, and I just didn't really like that too much. And sometimes trainers don't do that well coming off of Trey Wood, so I put him in the second spot.
All right, so I'll go 3-4. You'll go 3-8? Yeah, 3-8, right?
I went 3-8-4. I thought Wrecking Ball finished well in his debut effort. You know, almost made up a length there, so I gave him a shot in third.
What did you pick for third, Ed?
I picked Taz's Tiny Pebble, but I'm not wild about this race. I would spread
You're
it myself.
You're probably spread,
yeah. If I'm playing pick four, I think I would use 1, 3, 4, 7, and 8. I think one of those five is going to win, but I could see an upset in here because I'm not overly sold on a Monster Hand. An Apolitical Pence, I would have been more sold on had the word been better.
Yes. So, yeah, it's just going to be a tricky leg. Probably go a few deep here in race number 3. Fourth leg, the payoff leg of the early pick 4. We got a field of 8 here. And who did you lay as the morning line favorite here?
I laid Teller He's Famous as a morning line favorite. Even toss out Walk With Jess has no shot.
I'm out of here. See you guys later.
But I those are the two horses I like.
Yes.
I thought it was Walk With Jess, and Curtis can talk about this more because he's part of and the ownership of this horse. Really lugged in badly. First time out, Oscar was had his feet up on the dashboard the last eighth of a mile.
Yeah.
What did Oscar say, or did he tell your dad anything afterwards?
He just said he didn't want to run over the Paul Jones runner to the inside. And he felt that he was just lugging in. At that time, he probably wasn't going to beat the outside horse. So better to save the horse than to run over and cause more trouble. But, yeah, I got
to
pick Walk With Jess on top. I was really scared of what he was going to do in his debut. And he kind of ran to his PPs if you watch both workouts. You know, he would break out quickly, but he ran really greatly. So same exact thing. He broke strong, and he was right there with the outside horse. He was really close early, right on the lead, but just started lugging in, and like Ed said, Oscar was standing up on him, and we just decided to save him and come back here.
So obviously the horse that's carried you the most is going to be the 7 Teller He's Famous. I like 7-6-4. Four card tricks there for Terry Knight. It's probably a horse that I could improve. Had worked 12-20 before that debut. He ran okay there, finishes second behind Deceiver, who was a very nice winner that night. But I think the race is really between the 6 and 7. You agree?
I agree. And I think you see one Andrade riding card tricks. He's been working a lot of horses in the morning for the Terry Knight outfit along with Jesus Ayala. So he's getting the mount here on card tricks because Jesus is riding some of the more prominent horses from the Legacy Ranch later on. Of course, we'll talk about the horse that won the Kindergarten Futurity that he's going to be riding in race number 6 here in a little bit. But I would definitely think that Teller He's Famous, I thought, was won a lot easier than the margin indicates. It looked like Ayala had a lot of horse left, and I'm just going to use the 7 and 6. I feel pretty comfortable with those two horses. I think that they're going to probably separate themselves from the field.
I agree. I think the race has been between those two, and we'll see if Curtis gets his picture taken there after race 4. But most importantly, it's going to be the time. Got to put in a quick time early in the card.
Yeah, I mean, these time trials, they come down, to the thousandths of the second. Like I said, it's pretty tough when I think I've been 11th twice. So
yeah,
I like I'm in an earlier trial, but at the same time, I got to sweat the rest of the night.
All right, race 5, field of 9 here for the 5th race. And morning line favorite is going to be, is it Miss KO? Yes, yeah. Right? Yeah, Miss KO is going to be the morning night favorite. Is that the horse you picked on top as well or no?
Yeah, I really like Miss KO because she did something a lot of horses can't do, qualified for the kindergarten just off a trial race with no race before that. And I think the distance is going to favor Miss KO. The horse missed the break the first time out from the rail and pulled away and had quite a bit of trouble in the finals of the kindergarten, kind of shifted out, but then got bumped in the hind quarters by the eighth ball. And that's the reason why Miss KO was not disqualified. But the horse was caught in tight quarters of the wire and still kept trying. So I would think Miss KO has a pretty good advantage on here. The other horse I would consider in here would be the eight horse Majestic Mr. Perry, because I like the way the horse worked before the debut and ran to those works last time out. And I know Jaime Gomez prepares his horses for these trials. Yeah. So I thought that those were the three horses in here, the five, eight, and I'd throw Conquering Marie in as well.
Yeah, I think it's about a competitive field here. You got a few runners that had shown talent in the mornings that could put it together second time out. I went 5, 6, 8 in that order. So we talked about Miss KO. Conquering Marie there looked terrific on debut there. Just finished second behind Miss KO. I think the only benefit is that maybe she could outbreak Miss KO drawing right next to each other. That's the only scenario that I could see, the 6 upsetting the 5. Obviously, the 8 you talked about more. So I'll go 5, 6, 8 here.
Yeah, I went 6, 5, 8. Conquering Marie is my top pick. I just think being drawn outside of Miss KO will help this time. Gets out of the 2-hole. And it was only beaten 3/4 of a length. Wasn't going to beat Miss KO last time, but hopefully with a better break. And who knows, maybe Conquering Marie will love the 350 yards. Yeah. And not a huge upset, but hopefully a little one.
And I've got a note that a lot of people won't pick up on, but I talked to the stewards about this about a week ago. And the 3-horse Nautical Sea was entered here 2 weeks ago in a maiden race. But for some reason was listed as a gelding with the AQHA, and he was a colt.
Oh, really?
And with the new CHRB rules that came out, because wagering had already opened here and he was a gelding in the program, and we were going to have to announce he was a colt, the stewards were forced to scratch the horse.
Okay.
So he was not, they felt bad about it, but that's the way the rules are now because of the sex change and what's happened with these first-time geldings and other changes. So that's why the horse came back and worked out of the gate on May the 19th, 350 yards.
Mm-hmm.
Which may have been to his benefit anyway. But if you're looking why Nautical Sea was scratched, he was actually a colt the first time, but he was listed as a gelding, but that's before that new rule came out.
I don't think, it's that far outside the realm of possibility here for, Nautical Sea to win. I thought his debut effort was all right. You know, he had a little bit of trouble. He got bumped and lugged in at the start, but, he only lost by a length, and he was well back that day, and hopefully he can just improve a little and be back to normal.
And Chrisman has been having a few good few weeks the last few weekends. He's back riding well and picking up some wins. So that's going to be Nautical Sea there from post number 3.
Yes.
All right, race 6, field of 8 here. And we have – let me look at the morning line. Okay, so I went with the 2 Corona by Corona. Wicked Affair, what odds do you expect Wicked Affair to be at post time?
1-5.
Yeah, right?
I'll be very surprised. I was almost laid the horse. I was going to lay the horse 2-5. And it balanced out with 1-2. And I do respect the horse that you picked, Corona by Corona. I just wish the horse wasn't drawn inside.
Yeah.
I talked to Keith Nelson after his last race. And Keith says, I sure hope I don't draw inside.
I know.
Because the horse just wants to luck.
Yeah.
And you can't afford a mistake. I think Wicked Affair is the best 2-year-old on the grounds. I thought that before the kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
And according to what Pete Perella from the Legacy Ranch told me, that the horse is doing better now than she was
really
going into the kindergarten, that she's not regressed at all. So if that's the case, the added distance, I think, is going to really help her.
Yeah, all eyes will be on Wicked Affair. She really turned it on the second half of the race last time out from the outside post. She lugged in a little bit, but she had that clear path, was able to get the job done. I'm going to see if the 2 Corona by Corona could post a mild upset, but who else would scare you in this field to maybe complete the trifecta or super?
Oh, God, Curtis can help out on that. I just think Wicked Affair is a complete standout. And talking about whether the horse lugs or not, it's drawn between 2 horses that don't have that much ability.
Yes.
In my opinion. That's really going to help Wicked Affair, that even if the horse makes a little bit of a mistake, I don't think the horse is going to lose the path away from the gate. And I just think that I'll be very surprised in my opinion, if she doesn't win by a length and a half. That's just the way I feel.
I went with the 7, Tough Enough Jess, in second. I thought it was a pretty good debut effort, went 15-68, but the horse was hand-urged. I didn't really think that Eduardo Nicasio was asking mm-hmm. all of this horse. And, you know, Jose Nicasio gets aboard this time, but I've learned that that's okay if Jaime's switching the Nicasio brothers like that. But, you know, I don't think they can beat the Four Wicked Affair, but, you know, I think Tough Enough Jess can get in there for the exact.
Yeah, Tough Enough Jess is my third choice on paper just because interesting that he debuted, he got the job done, and now he's a first-time gelding. So they gelded him after that victory, which is interesting.
No, it was on the proof. We took that off.
Oh, okay.
He was a gelding last time he ran.
Okay, good.
He was actually he was a gelding first. I think last time out.
That's why it didn't make sense to me.
Right,
so
he was a gelding the first time out, and for some reason came back on the proof. Okay. We got a change for the official proof.
Good. So I'm reading still off the proof. So my mistake on that one. So Tough Enough Jess was a gelding beforehand. But my big note on this, he's a big-bodied gelding that could maybe improve going through 50. So we'll see if Wicked Affair can post a fast clocking in race number 6. Race 7, got a field of 9. And this where you got another runner coming out of the kindergarten. That's Striver, who I think ran a bang-up effort in the kindergarten. And I think she still looked maybe a little bit green. She kind of waited on a few horses when she got to them. But overall, I was very impressed with that second place finish from Striver.
Yeah, normally going into the Ed Burke trials, and I think Curtis might agree with me, but in the past I've thrown out the kindergarten horses because they're coming back in 3 weeks, and it's usually an inferior bunch that go in the kindergarten. But my personal opinion this year is that the group in the kindergarten was stronger than normal.
Yes.
And I think Striver can finish. That's what impressed me the time before. And I almost picked Parsons Rocket on top because that horse improved so much the second time out, and I think Parsons Rocket's going to benefit by the added distance, but I don't think the horse is quick enough to go with Striver. So those are the two I like, and Dexter would be my third selection in here. He impressed. I think Curtis liked Dexter the first time when he had the outside.
Yeah. He just broke out there, and he got bumped a little bit and drifted in, but he went on with his business there. And, you know, put up a little bit slower time than we were used to seeing of, I think, the top two-year-olds in 1570, but you know, beat Nautical Sea, who we talked about, and Walk Through Bar was a horse that I think is a really quick breaker and can't finish. So the fact that Dexter got outbroke by Walk Through Bar, you know, didn't really surprise me, but, you know, I like the way Dexter finished it. You know, if you really like him, I think you're getting a good price at 5-1. I went with Striver because this horse finally made a believer out of me.
Yeah.
After the kindergarten, you know, when he came out in his maiden, you know, debut effort, he was going against Wicked Affair and he broke really sharp, and I thought, okay, well, he just, you know, caught a flyer and you know, put up a really good time against Wicked Affair. But then he came back in those trials and he fired again right away with 1544, and then he put up another 1545 after lugging in throughout. And I just think he's just a really professional racehorse, and he likes doing what he does, and you know, I think he should just come back and fire another good effort.
All right, so we're in agreement that Striver comes out of a very good effort. Dexter will probably be my long shot play on paper. 5-1 will probably get every bit of that. So that's probably the only horse that I could see upsetting Striver in race number 7. Race 8, we got a field of 8 here to start. Is it the start of the late pick 4? 8, 9, 10, yes. I can do math, yes. It is the start of late pick 4. And field of 8, and who did you give the check mark here, Ed?
To your lock of the night.
Oh, yes.
I
realize
it's going to be his lock of the night. Hey, it's my check mark.
I'm not going to get any kind of prize now. Ed's going to give it out.
Well, it's my top selection, but I could not make him a lock. That's my feeling, but he was on my horses to watch list. Hot Little Kitty, I thought, was giant the first time out. Had all kinds of trouble, was caught behind horses at the 8th pole, galloped out huge, and I like the way the horse finished in the workouts before. I don't think she's that slow out of the gate, but I just wish that she was drawn towards the outside, but
yeah,
that's my top selection in here because rest of the field, Mr. Apolitical and Quick to Royalty, I think they're decent horses, but I think the distance is going to definitely favor the two.
Yeah, and I think that's why I went with the lock in this race, not only because of the trouble line out of the two, but also because of the other quality in the field. There's not any standouts, so I think it was a good shot to take a shot at a price. I'm not going to get any price. Ed Berger gave it out. So
if you two both give out a horse, it has no shot.
No shot. So we'll see what kind of odds Hot Little Kitty gets at post signs. But everything Ed said about huge trouble line, stuck behind horses.
I've got to find out what Curtis thinks.
Yes.
I went with the 6, Mr.
Okay, there you go.
All right.
But I was flip-flopping between the 2 and the 6.
Oh.
What you guys were saying before about how well this horse had finished, the 2 horse, Hot Little Kitty, how well she had finished. I thought this horse was finishing also in her works. And I like the kitty ups. You know, they tend to be finishing too. Yes. So going this extra 50 yards, you know, should be a benefit. But I just like that May 1st work of Mr. A Political. And yes. Ran against Parsons Rocket, who we previously talked about in the debut. And I think 1561 is a pretty good number. Yes. There, and had a little bit of trouble. So it's drawn next to Quick to Royalty, who's a quick breaker. So I don't think there should be a whole lot of trouble there. And, you know, if Hot Little Kitty doesn't break like she did last time, you know, could definitely be there in the winner's circle.
The other night, I can tell you, because Ed Allred owns Los Alamitos Racetrack. He has so many horses. And when it comes to the trials, I've talked to Scott Willoughby and I've talked to Jimmy Lynn before.
Yeah.
He does not want to run a horse in the trials that's going to be 20 or 30 to 1. He says, if I'm going to run a horse, I better have a chance.
Yeah.
So that's why you don't see a lot of his horses in the trials. He doesn't want to just take up space.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's only got a couple of horses in the trials on Sunday. So that tells me that they're pretty high on Hot Little Kitty.
That could also get pretty expensive with all those maturity trial payments.
Well, he's got the money.
Yeah.
True.
But yeah, it could get pricey. And I can tell you, this is for all the horses he breeds. This is not, he didn't breed this one. He bought this one at the sale for $57,000. So when he goes out and buys a horse and pays a pretty penny, I think they expect some good things out of a Hot Little Kitty. So we'll see if we can get a 4-1 or closer to that. But I'm guessing he's probably going to be 8-5 now.
Well, I don't know if he'd be quite that sure. I'm guessing probably 2-1.
2-1.
I think he and Mr. A Political will probably go off at about the same.
Now, I didn't know what to make of the 7, the Invader, but obviously he's a horse that won his debut by a length and a half, then came back into Dixie Petri there and finished second by a neck. Obviously, there's no video replay analysis to look at. So.
Well, but he did work between races that night out of the gate, that 350 yard workout.
Yeah.
And he was never asked to run too much. He drifted in. He worked decent.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't overly thrilled with the workout. I think the horse definitely has a chance, but I wouldn't bet my house on it.
No. So we'll see. That's the question mark horse as far as this field goes.
Yeah. I think the only one we haven't talked about really was the 5 Quick to Royalty. This horse is, you know, well regarded from the work.
Yes.
You know, just how well she could break and how quickly she was, but I don't know, she hasn't really shown that final kick that's necessary, so I don't know if the 50 yards is going to be to her liking, but I think she can break out of there and stay with him for a little while.
All right, so that's the start of the pick war. I'm probably going to single the 2. If I'm right, we'll move on. If not, we'll probably get beat by one of the other ones, but I'll take a shot there with Hot Little Kitty. Race number 9, the final pick 3 of the card. Field of 9. Did you give the check mark to Razzle Dazzle, Ed?
No, I gave it to Alley Babe Foose.
Oh.
I really like the way the horse won first time out. The horse that ran second is coming back. Golden Boy Gonz is coming back in the 11th race.
Yes.
The final trial. And I thought those two horses really ran well. Fire and Fury ran in the second race, I believe, here on Sunday night, which will be the second trial. So we'll see how that horse comes out. But I just like the way Alley Babe Foose overcame a little early trouble. What caught my eye was there was another 2-year-old race that night that was run a length and a half slower. So I think time-wise, Alley Babe Foose got a big number.
Yeah, and then she's going to be there from post number 4. Who did you pick on top here, Curtis?
I went with the 4, Alley Babe Foose.
Okay.
Same reasons. Just dueled and was pretty game throughout there. But I remember Jaime told Orlando in an interview about some of the horses he was high on, and this was one of the horses he mentioned. So, you know, coming back and firing a big effort wouldn't surprise me. For second place, I went to the far outside for the sad face emoji.
Sad face emoji.
And Jose Flores, you know, dropped a big upset there in debut. But I really liked that this horse was, you know, along the rail and finished out really nicely against Accommodating, who came back to win and just gets off the rail and is drawn back outside here. I give her a big look.
That's who I picked on top. I'm going to pick Sad Face Emoji on the outside. I like the way this horse ran straight there in that debut win, looked professional. So I'll pick the 9 on top. Alley Babe Foose is going to be my second choice. And probably a long shot, probably the 2 no-telling there to complete the trifecta. So I'll go 9-4-2.
I'm throwing Razzle Dazzle. I can't completely ignore that horse. Yeah. He beat no-telling pretty easily last time out. I don't think the distance is going to hurt Razzle Dazzle. But one more note about Alley Babe Foose. Babe on the Fly has been a really productive dam. And she was an outstanding racehorse as well. So I think the breeding indicates that Alley Babe Foose is going to run really strong.
Yeah, I went 4-9-6. I threw Razzle Dazzle in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
I just had a really nice win, was in command throughout last time. So we'll see if she can get the 350 yards.
And she was favored in debut there when finishing third behind Pack Light. All right, that's race number 9, the start of the late double here in race number 10. Got a field of 8. And this is probably one of the visually impressive runners that impressed me off of a win. And I'm talking about the 8, Just Curling on the outside, who improved very, very much so from the first start to the second start. He just looked like a big, big gelding that could enjoy the 350. So I'll give Just Curling on the outside the check mark here for race 10.
Well, there was a toss-up to me between the 5 and the 8. I went with Just Curling just because of the huge improvement second time out. Like the outside draw and the distance, I think it's definitely going to.
And it was at this point when you could you can blame the technical difficulties on the producer myself, because I believe I pressed the wrong button, so we missed the analysis there for that race. Let's pick it right back up where we're wrapping race 11. You want to get the top 3 picks from Curtis, Annette Burghardt, and myself, of course. They'll be on the consensus that I'll attach to the article at losponies.com and also on Twitter. But a little bit of technical malfunctions there, courtesy of yours truly. But let's pick it up, recapping the picks for race 11, and then just talking about the Triple Crown with Justify there with Ed Burghardt and Curtis Treese to end the show. All right, so that's race 11. To recap, I'll go race 11. We go 8, 5, and 2, the same as Ed. And Curtis will go 8, 5, and 7. All right, that's a wrap-up on trials night and a little bit of talking with Mr. Ed Burghardt. And to recap, what did you think of Justify, Triple Crown?
Well, awesome, obviously. I mean, Mike Smith's a friend of mine.
Yeah.
So that makes a big difference. I've gotten to know Mike pretty well. And to me, no one's more deserving to win a Triple Crown than Mike, as much as he's done for racing. And, of course, the first thing he started talking about was he was going to, started talking about the disabled riders on the gallop, you know, when Donna Brothers was interviewing him afterwards. And obviously Justify ran a perfect race. He broke super, was able to make a comfortable lead. Other horses were unable to get in good position to go after Justify early, and that was able to control the pace. But what impressed me most about Justify is that he beat 9 other horses, and no other Triple Crown winner's ever beaten that many horses in the Belmont. I mean, when Man of War and those horses won, they were going against
small fields.
Even Secretariat only had to beat 4 horses. But I don't want to compare this race to Secretariat. That's the best I've ever seen a horse run. But I was super, super impressed.
Yeah. So, did you watch the race, Curtis?
Yeah, I watched it, and I thought he just everything set up just the way he wanted after the other Baffert runner kind of carried everything out.
Race riding.
Yeah, maybe he got a little help there, but I mean, he just had everything his way.
He did.
He got the fractions how he wanted. I think Gronkowski had everything, that he wanted to. He was reserved to the back there and really made a run.
Yes. At one point, it looked like he was going to challenge him. But
yeah, watching the helicopter view of Gronkowski all the way around, you know, my parents, they were saying, oh, look, you know, he could have beat him if there was only a little bit more. I said, they're going a mile and a half, you know. He made his bid where he got, you know, within a length and a half, 2 lengths, and Justify just kicked on, and it was really impressive. The horse was well-deserved.
Now, me and Ed talked a little bit about this, and I'm in the camp that we might not see him race again just because the resume's there. He's undefeated. He's a Triple Crown winner.
Yeah.
There's not really much upside now.
They already sold the breeding rights, I believe, for $60 million.
So I'm on the boat that we probably won't see him again. What did you think?
You know, in this day and age, it wouldn't surprise me if they just, that's it.
Yeah.
He's done. He's proved that he's the best. He can retire undefeated.
Yes.
You know, I think after American Pharaoh, you know, won the Triple Crown, he didn't have anything left to prove after that, but they came back and ran him again. But, you know, if they wanted to stop now, you know, they can. I think they probably will.
Yeah, I think in previous horses, we would have probably been saying, nah, why stop now? But I think his resume is so special that I think it's
he's a colt.
Yeah. Yeah.
It makes a big difference.
Yeah.
There's a lot more upside to just shut it down, retire undefeated, and go to the breeding
show. Yeah. When you have a gelding, there's not much to think about. you can go out there and keep making that steady paycheck. But, you know, when you're a colt or a mare with high profile wins, they want to get you in the breeding.
That's why I keep working.
Yes.
I could keep getting stronger.
Yeah. Wife is going to want to have that wallet to hit some trifecta. So. All right, Ed, thanks for joining us. That was fun. And we'll talk next week, Curtis.
All right, bye, everybody.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.